Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday morning. It's August 19th. I've got 63 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City, as well as at the Heber Valley Airport. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Wednesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back as we go into your Wednesday. We're going to be looking at a mixture of clouds and sunshine. We could also see some hazy conditions developing due to a new wildfire that we have going, the Dugway wildfire this morning that is located at the bottom of Weber Canyon. Some of that smoke and haze may drift over portions of the area, so don't be surprised if you see that. But again, otherwise, partly cloudy skies expected. It's going to be a hot day. Temperatures climbing into the upper 80s to near 90 in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures climbing into the mid-90s in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into your Thursday, look for partly cloudy skies. Temperatures will be climbing near 90 degrees again as we go into Park City. We'll be seeing those highs climbing into the mid-90s in the Heber Valley. Once we make our way into your Friday, we're going to be looking at partly cloudy skies. Again, temperatures near 90 degrees in Park City. Highs will be in the mid-90s for us in the Heber Valley. We will have a better chance of isolated showers and storms develop, and we could see a pop-up storm on your Thursday afternoon, but a much better chance for your Friday heading into the weekend. Saturday and Sunday, we're going to be looking at scattered showers and storms across the Wasatch Back, and that'll take those temperatures from near 90 in Park City down into the low 80s through the weekend. Otherwise, in the Heber Valley, we'll go from a high near the mid-90s on Saturday to highs only near 90 as we get into your Sunday. Moving into next week, we'll start off the week with that chance of pop-up showers and thunderstorms, and that will continue to be the trend off and on each and every day for your Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday afternoons. High temperatures will only be in the low 80s for your Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday afternoons in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures only in the upper 80s over towards the Heber Valley for your Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday afternoons. Again, we'll have those daily pop-up storm chances once we get towards your Thursday afternoon, but more specifically, Friday through the weekend and right on through the middle of next week. So keep the rain gear close by. As look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back, I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Madison Lambden. She's the development and events manager for National Ability Center. She'll have details on the 20th annual Summit Challenge. Park City Manager Adam Lenhard and Deputy Park City Manager Jody Emery will preview this week's City Council meeting, including a look at the Main Street area plan, which is back for review. And from Heber City Mayor Heidi Franco calling in with an update from last night's City Council meeting. Well, the Summit County Council may rewrite the Snyderville Basin's process to rezone properties. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports residents can weigh in before council members vote.
Community Development Director Peter Barnes said at Monday's Summit County Housing Authority meeting that he didn't expect the proposed rezoning process to become so controversial. Some on the Summit County Council worry about making rezoning too easy. Planners have proposed requiring less detail from developers up front when they're asking to change what's allowed on their land. The new process would still require the county and a landowner to agree on building heights, density, layouts, and other aspects of a project. Should they get to a rezone before they build, developers would eventually still need to file the same detailed paperwork that the Snyderville Basin Development Code currently requires at the outset. Barnes hopes to address council member concerns at Wednesday's meeting.
In order to reassure the county council, the concern at the end of the last meeting was the county council are going to lose control. How do we make sure something happens? The previous iteration of the code had an optional development agreement. This version that we have on the table today requires a development agreement.
Development agreements are contracts between the county and a landowner. Residents will get to weigh in on the proposed rezoning process at the Wednesday council meeting. Affordable housing groups plan to voice their support. The Summit County Housing Authority voted to endorse the new process Monday, and it has a favorable recommendation from the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. The change would only affect the unincorporated Snyderville Basin, not any rezones within city limits or on the eastern side of Summit County. The policy proposal accompanies Summit County's efforts to negotiate a partnership with Columbus Pacific Development on the county-owned Klein Dolly property in Jeremy Ranch. The two sides had plans to build affordable housing as well as a new fire station and recreation building, but talks have stalled after the developer expressed concern in March about the financial risk involved in the process. Barnes says part of the issue with rezones in general is they currently require more detail than other kinds of developments. And he says that granularity has more drawbacks than benefits.
Consequently, as the project moves through the Snideville Basin Planning Commission and hopefully to County Council, there's abortive work being done, repetitive, expensive work, reviews and re-reviews by staff. Resources are being wasted, time is being taken on everybody's part.
When council members last discussed the proposal July 29th, their opinions on it varied. Councilmember Roger Armstrong was one of those worried about relinquishing control over the final product of a rezone, and Councilmember Candace Hart says the process is, quote, difficult for a reason. Councilmembers Megan McKenna and Chris Robinson were concerned the status quo stands in the way of the county reaching its affordable housing goals. But Robinson still echoed concerns about losing control over development. Wednesday's public hearing begins at 6 p.m. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
The annual Summit Challenge to benefit the National Ability Center is just around the corner. On the phone with details, I have NAC's Development and Events Manager, Madison Lambden. Good morning, Madison.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. So why don't you start by just telling us what is the Summit Challenge?
So Summit Challenge is a wonderful bike ride throughout all of Summit County and Wasatch County, and it's a fundraiser for everything great we do at the National Ability Center.
So when is this happening?
This is happening next Saturday, August 29th.
Okay, and who can participate?
Anyone and everyone. Bring your friends, family. We have a ride or a route for everyone who wants to ride.
Okay, well then tell us about the routes. I mean, if you've got something for everyone.
Yeah, so we got a 16, 25, 50, 80, and 100-mile route. We also have some shorter versions for any adaptive riders who would like something just a little bit shorter than the 16. But we have something for everyone. We also do a discovery loop that'll happen at 1 o'clock that day, and that's actually a free one. It's a 1-mile loop, so a lot of people bring their little kiddos and come out, decorate their bikes, and do the loop together.
Okay, so the folks that are off on the 100-mile route, can you give us an idea of where that goes?
Yeah, so again, through Wasatch County, Summit County, all that good stuff, but the coolest thing about that is that they are at Wolf Creek Ranch, and we are the only ride in all of Utah that Wolf Creek Ranch allows us to go through, which is just a beautiful place to be.
Okay, and what time do people start taking off at?
The earliest route will be the 100 that will take off at 7 a.m.
Okay, all right.
And so what's early mornings for sure.
Yeah, what's the what's kind of the most popular distance that you see?
I would say either the 25 or the 50.
Yeah, okay. So how does this event help support the NAC and what you do there?
Yeah, so this event is the biggest summer fundraiser we have. Usually we have about 1,000 riders that come out, and we encourage people to come and build teams and fundraise that way. All the proceeds go to continuing making our mission great and supporting people with disabilities, getting out there and being able to recreate.
Yeah. Okay. How do cyclists register?
They can go to summitchallenge100.org, and that will show all the routes that we have this year, along with all the details of the ride. Another cool thing is that we'll have our vendor village from 11 to 4. That's completely free. People are welcome to come. That entails, I like to call it like a little bit of a, what am I trying to say? But it's a fun time to come, and you can walk around and meet all the different vendors there. We'll have some good food, some ice cream, some cool adaptive rides, you know, all the things out there. But that is free, and that's from 11 to 4.
Okay. So are they different prices to register depending on how far you're going?
They are. The further you go, the more expensive the ride is.
All right. And I think you do have support along the routes.
We do, yeah. We have 10 different rest stops that riders can stop, rehydrate, get a little snack, get a little rest in if needed, and continue on the ride.
Okay. What are you looking to raise?
$185,000.
Okay, and that's, again, through the registration fees as well as the fundraiser, you know, that people collect money for their rides? Is that how it works?
Yeah, exactly. So a lot through fundraising and also through that registration.
Okay. And then how is the money spent? I mean, is it specifically for the NAC cycling programs or does it just kind of go into the general fund?
It goes into the general fund. We want to just continue to be able to, like, provide scholarships and give everyone access to the outdoors.
All right. And do you need any volunteers?
Yes, we always need volunteers. We rely on hundreds of volunteers for this event. So you can sign up for that as well at our NAC website, which is nationalabilitycenter.org. And yeah, we'd be happy to have you.
Okay. And what, those shifts last 4 hours, 5 hours?
You know, it depends. Mm-hmm. It varies. Some of them go the entire time, but you can pick and choose what is the right fit for you.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, just come out and support, and you'll see some riders. Be prepared to see some riders outside in the community next Saturday, and we'd love to have you.
Yeah, I mean, I think you get hundreds of riders for this, yeah?
Yeah, last year we had over 1,000 riders.
Okay, so it's busy. It's busy out by Queens Junction.
It is a busy day, yeah, for sure.
Okay, Madison, appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Park City Council meets Thursday in work session starting just before 4 o'clock. In the studio with a preview of the meeting, I have Park City Manager Adam Lenhart and Deputy City Manager Jody Emery. Good morning.
Good morning.
Adam, let's start off first off with there'll be a discussion and work session about the Salt Lake City Airport Connector Pilot Project. Certainly before your time, but Park City used to have several transportation companies that could take residents and visitors back and forth to the airport for a reasonable amount. And then it seems like after COVID, things dried up. They either sold their vehicles, and we had a bankruptcy of one of the largest providers. So what are we doing now?
Yeah, great question. I think that route has proven to be challenging in the past. And what we have right now is, I'll go back to 2024. The mayor appointed a committee of residents to look at emerging transportation trends, those types of things that could disrupt or have the potential to disrupt travel to and around Park City. And this committee came out with a study. It was called the Emerging Disruptors Future of Transportation Report. One of the items in that study was to look at this connection to the Salt Lake City International Airport. So recently, Snow Country Limousine applied for and was awarded a grant from Summit County. It was a restaurant tax grant in the amount of $160,000 to initiate a pilot program that would perform this service. Now, the total cost of this service, if it were to run throughout the winter season, 15 weeks, it'd be about $850,000. Most of that cost, ideally, most of that cost comes from fares, from ridership. So this is a paid service, and you would have to have a reservation, you'd have to book that, you'd have a specific reserve seat in advance. There's obviously a funding gap. So if this service is going to cost $850,000, the county has provided $160,000 to kick it off. There's likely some gap that Snow Country Limousine may be asking the city to kick in. If the city were to help subsidize this service, I think we would be looking at two different things. We would say, first of all, we would want the revenues that would support this program to be tourism and transportation related. And then secondly, there should be a direct measurable benefit to Park City residents. In this case, that would be fewer cars on our roads, less traffic congestion. So there could be a significant benefit. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for proof of concept. Would this really be an improvement? Could this service ultimately pay for itself? And that's the question and analysis in front of the council on Thursday.
Okay, so what's the city being asked to match the county's $160,000?
That could be likely. As far as I'm aware, there is no formal ask. We'll see how that discussion goes and how the city may be able to participate and to what extent would be appropriate.
Yeah, so again, that's really all the city would be providing is money towards the pilot program?
By and large, yes. We could provide logistical support, timing, scheduling, assistance. We are not allowed to provide this service ourselves.
Why not?
As a recipient of federal funds, we are obligated to provide service that is open and available to the general public. So a product that specifically includes The actual term is a reserved seat charter service. So any service that requires an advance ticket or reservation, reserve seat, is not considered to be open to the public. It doesn't have, it's just a fixed route, one destination to the other. So the ideal operator for this is a private company.
Okay. Is the chamber involved at all?
They are. The chamber is providing assistance in terms of marketing and other support coordination with hotels and the lodging association.
Yeah. Well, I want to say that I think a lot of our guests are already taking some kind of shuttle up here. And the reason we do that is that when we have the blackout days, you know, with the Epic Pass and stuff, we don't have any traffic. I mean, it's like it's the locals coming up that are kind of creating the traffic. So are we really hitting the right disruptor here?
That's exactly what we want to explore. We want to, again, proof of concept. We want to make sure that this service does what we think it could do. At full capacity, this has the potential to serve up to 37,000 riders per season. Will that actually reduce traffic? That's what we want to know.
Okay. Later on, the Main Street area plan is back, and some may remember a preliminary plan was rolled out in 2023, and it was fast and furious. We all kind of wondered, you know, where did this come from? What did we miss? A couple of open houses were held. I think people got a little bit freaked out about the amount of building and the density planned, and then it sort of all just went away. So it's being brought back now. Why now?
Well, it didn't quite all go away. What did happen is in December 2024, council did decline to adopt that full plan that you're talking about, but they chose to send some priority pieces to feasibility study instead. So that's what's coming back. We're talking about what is the history of the Main Street area plan, what pieces of it did move forward, and does council want us to continue with those items, or do they want us to reconsider a full plan?
Okay, so what's being proposed to the council at this point?
So what we're going to be talking about is the priority pieces that I just mentioned. So we're looking at roadway and circulation. That feasibility study is substantially complete. There are some concepts being presented. These are not final designs. Those have been included in the staff report. But it really does look at prioritizing pedestrians on Main Street, but also considers parking and making sure that we continue to provide parking opportunities.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of the proposed circulation and the infrastructure required improvements. Let's first talk about parking. I mean, we've got the old China Bridge parking structure that was built in 1986 as part of this. That's slated to come down?
Eventually, yes. We estimate that that has between 5 and 10 years of useful life left. That southern portion is the older portion that was built in 1986, and then the larger northern section was built in 2006.
Okay, so if you take that down, how does that get replaced, the parking?
And that, it all depends. It depends on whether council wants to consider China Bridge parking as part of an overall Old Town area plan and consider what other parking might replace the China Bridge parking, or if we want to just continue with each of these elements separately and consider China Bridge as part of that parking plan. So right now it's really an asset management mode. I think anybody who's been on Main Street recently recognizes that we're doing a little bit of work. That is an ongoing maintenance that's primarily focused on that southern section, which is the uphill portion, but did include some work on the newer section, the north section.
Yeah, so I guess if we're building more density, because, I mean, the original plan showed, you know, boutique hotels. I mean, it was just, a lot of density. If we're going to build more density, doesn't that bring more cars to Main Street? And, do we have room to park them?
Well, in theory, yes, but also if we're considering other opportunities for parking, such as the Gordo and Richardson park and rides that have been contemplated as part of Recreate 248, that would then relieve some of the parking pressure on Main Street. That's the idea. And there's also another element of this plan, that's the aerial transit. That also has is in progress with feasibility study.
Okay, hold off on just that a little bit. So on the China Bridge, is everything coming down? I mean, KPCW is kind of attached to the new section of the garage.
Hopefully not. It would be more cost effective to only replace what needs to be replaced. However, once you start getting into these structures, they're so connected, it may make sense and be more efficient to rebuild the entire structure with a new design. I do want to clarify, or at least address a comment that you made just a minute ago about this hotel concept. That was not one of the ideas that was moved forward for any further consideration. So I'm not aware that that is an ongoing topic that we'll be discussing with council.
Okay. Also, I want to talk a little bit about that aerial transit, as you started to mention there, Jody. Is this what part of what Deer Valley's payment was for when the snow park expansion plan got approved? There was about a $50 million payment as part of that to build some transit parking lots. I mean, I don't know how the money is being spent.
Great question. That $15 million is tied to a regionally significant transportation facility, which ideally is park and ride in the Richardson Flat, Quinns Junction area.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, this aerial transit, we're still talking about two different designs, one from Richardson Flat directly to Snow Park, mm-hmm. a second one from, I guess, downtown Park City to Snow Park. Are there pros and cons to each of those?
Absolutely, and that's something that they'll be discussing is where we are with that aerial transit feasibility study. And it is two lines being contemplated currently. But again, the next phase is really gonna require council direction. It's gonna involve a lot of stakeholder engagement. It's also going to look closer at the alignment specific analysis. And there has not been much contact with or formal engagement with any of the private property owners. And so that all has to come before we move any further.
Yeah, I mean, it was the price range of like between $30 and $50 million. And in fact, the more expensive one was the shorter route between here and Snow Park. Why is that?
It would impact more private property.
That you would
yes,
have to acquire?
Reason. Correct.
Okay. All
in
right.
the form of easements, most likely.
Yeah.
But again, it's very early mm-hmm. to presume that we could even work that out or reach those agreements with the property owners. It's all still very high level and a lot of conversations still to come.
All right. So if we're looking to keep cars out of downtown, why wouldn't this get built from Richardson Flat? I mean, why not? Why would we want to start it from one of the most congested areas in town anyway?
In terms of the parking garage?
Main Street, yeah.
This is a great question. We have so many people who are here as our workforce. That is a very high priority for us to be able to allow easy access. We think that's probably one of the best things we could do to support our businesses here in Old Town, is to do whatever we can to make it easier for their workforce to get here. It is a challenging place to work. Just the weather can be extremely difficult. And we find that if we can have parking, and we've designated employee parking throughout Old Town and things like that, this is a very important facility for us, the China Bridge Parking Garage. It does largely serve our workforce, but of course, you know, anybody could use that. Since we have that, we own the property, it's a great facility, huge amenity that serves all of Old Town. We do want to maintain that asset. We want to continue to operate that and have that available.
Yeah, but I guess, I mean, what employees are you talking about? Those that work on Main Street or those
Correct.
That work on
Correct.
Snow Park?
On Main Street, primarily, yes.
Okay, so you'd want that from Richardson Flat, right?
I think that would be a great connection.
Yeah.
If we could figure that connection out, yes. If we could divert those cars and keep them from coming into town in the first place, that's great. We already have enough density here in town that I think that parking will always be full in China Bridge.
Okay, and we've got like 8 buses an hour that from the transit center that go to Snow Park. So if people are looking to get to Snow Park, they've got 8 options an hour.
Correct,
huh?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So where's all the money? Let's drop back now. We're also talking about circulation. I kind of skipped over that. And that's on Main Street and Sweet Alley. What are we talking about here? Making Main Street one way with kind of like an electric trolley that goes up and down?
That is the concept that's being presented. But again, we're so far from final design or even close to final design. So what is being shown in the concept is one transit lane, wider pedestrian walkways on both sides of the street, one dedicated transit lane that goes up and down. I think what's drawn looks like an electric trolley, but obviously we have our trolley and beloved trolley. So we'll see where that goes with council conversation. But again, the idea is to make Main Street much more pedestrian friendly, but to also allow the circulation that we know people rely on to get to the businesses and the businesses would like to have.
Okay, so Main Street would be one way downhill, right?
I actually am not.
Is that what's being proposed?
I don't actually know the specifics of that.
Okay. And then Sweet Alley is being proposed to be two directions.
Yes.
So if you were going to access Main Street, you'd have to do it via Sweet Alley.
Yeah. Depending on which direction the travel goes, yes, you would have to use Sweet Alley to get one way or the other to come back down. And Sweet Alley is also being looked at as providing some more pedestrian improvements, getting better sidewalks, getting some shade. Making a multi-use service and snow storage lane to make sure we have a place to put the snow as well, which is important in the winter, as we all know, and still allow the deliveries that help the Main Street businesses keep going.
That would be done from Sweet Alley. What about the businesses west of Main Street there, you know, that back up to Park Ave? I mean, delivery trucks just have to go further?
Possibly. We are looking at service delivery in terms of packages, freight, how we get in and out of Old Town. That's a concept that we've looked at on city tour that could come into play with the council. But that is a great question. Primarily up to this point, we've focused on Main Street and Sweet Alley.
Okay, and for people who've been listening to this show for a while, they'll remember kind of the whole sidewalk deal. And it's like, you know, we've spent millions of dollars to replace our sidewalks. Wasn't that all that long ago? I want to say maybe a dozen years ago. And we didn't use granite. We didn't use concrete. We used granite. And I was like, really? Were granite sidewalks? And the reason I recall it was like, well, they last forever. Granite, you know, is not going to wear out like concrete does. But now we're talking about pulling that up and replacing them.
I think it was 20 years ago is what I'm understanding for the granite. I know. And nothing lasts forever. And I think it was a bit of a test or a pilot to see what it looked like. And it does seem as though the granite did last longer. But again, we've got some tough climate here. And when you are shoveling and snow blowing and snow plowing, it's, you know, it's going to be hard on any sort of surface. So I think we're back to concrete. I think we stopped doing that 5 years ago. Yeah.
Concrete's just more cost effective, and the issue really is not so much the surface, although longevity is great. It's really the width of that sidewalk and the how comfortable it is as you're walking up and down Main Street. It's pretty tight.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to widen them by what, a couple feet on each side?
It looks like about 8 feet minimum on the travel lane side.
Okay.
Yep.
And finally, I mean, where's all the money coming to do this?
Well, we, you know, identifying funding sources is part of the process, and that would be something to be contemplated by council and use our capital budget.
Do we have a price estimate, and at least what's being proposed at this point?
We have some price estimates. I think the roadway and circulation is looking at about $36 million for that. You mentioned the aerial transit. Those both have some estimates, and again, we finding the funding is part of the process.
All right. And do we have a timeline on this? Is this all we're hoping to get done before the 2034 games?
Sure would be nice.
Yeah.
So that's the goal.
Yes. Yeah. Investment in Main Street is going to continue forever. It's our greatest asset in the community. It brings in huge numbers of visitors. We'll never be done with Main Street. I think it's a continuous process.
Okay. Let's move on to the transportation performance report. I think what it shows is that our buses run on time. They show up. Performance is okay. We're seeing ridership. What we don't have, I think, is the residential coverage that people would like to see. So what do we do about that? Because I know we've tried microtransit, we have tried new bus routes, we have the bike share program, but none of that's kind of getting into the, lower Deer Valley areas, the upper Park Meadows area.
With our transit routes, we categorize those as one of two different types of route. You have your coverage routes, and those really are meant to get into those areas that are less dense, less populated, and even we know that when we're creating those routes, they're going to have lower ridership as well. And then the other type of route is the ridership route. Those are the ones that have lots of riders. They're going to those high density areas, the most popular destinations in town.
Okay, so I mean, are there thoughts about trying to add more to and how we get more people on the bus?
We are always evaluating that, and that's partly why we implemented these performance metrics. Mm-hmm. And as we assess those numbers as they're coming in, that's going to give us great direction on how and where we can improve. As of right now, we have about 90% of the city's primary residences that are covered by access to transit. We're really proud of that number. That's really great. And so that's always going to be the goal that we have.
So that's measured from how far? I mean, when you say 90% that people have access to transit, that they're within a mile or within a half mile?
Within a half mile, correct.
Okay. All right, let's see. A contract will also be let for a scope of services for the Munchkin and Woodbine Road improvements. This is basically where Recycle Utah sits now, and we're planning ahead for next spring when they relocate?
Correct. With the relocation of Recycle Utah and the city's acquisition of that property, we have the opportunity to extend Munchkin to the west and connect to Homestake. And that's actually going to be a really great connection. It'll improve mobility in that whole neighborhood. So we're excited to get that done. As we're going through the design process, there is the potential for a land swap with the Boneyard property owner. And then that would dictate, whether or not that land swap happens, that would dictate exactly where the extension of Munchkin goes. So we have two options there. It could go through the Boneyard parcel if we were to complete that land swap. If not, it would jog a little bit to the south, but ultimately it still connects to Homestake and gives us that additional route through that neighborhood.
So what still needs to be worked out then with...
We entered into the contract with HDR to do design work last September, and as we've gone through the process, we've identified a few more areas that we think would be great to include in the design. With this contract amendment in front of the council on Thursday, it would include design for a new water line to replace the existing water line with a new 10-inch line. It would also put the existing sewer line inside the right-of-way of the new road. So it's some additional items that will add to the scope of the project.
Okay. Any holdup, though, with the property owner? I mean, when does that get resolved in terms of with the Boneyard?
That's been ongoing for a number of months, and we would expect within a few weeks we'll have that worked out, some final decision one way or the other.
Okay. And does that just determine what the road looks like, whether it's kind of windy or just straight through?
Correct. Two things. Yes, it would be the alignment of the road itself. And depending on how that works out, it could, and this is one of the reasons we started to engage with that property owner, is that it could actually add some additional parking that would serve the patrons of both Blind Dog and the Boneyard. And that would be a positive thing. Those parking lots tend to fill up and popular place. So.
Okay. Let's see. We're also still working on the Bonanza 5 acres. Meanwhile, across the street from the new road of Munchkin and Woodbine, Vail Resorts owns a couple of acres there. Do we know of any plans that the resort is redeveloping?
We don't. Right now, we haven't seen any plans. Nothing's been shared with us. I do assume that, you know, someday that gets redeveloped. Couldn't speak in terms of timing or what their exact plans are.
Yeah, so, I mean, but has the city reached out? I mean, as it's developing its 5 acres there, I mean, why not try to include Vail Resorts?
Yeah, we have had conversations in terms of, you know, your neighbors, what is it that you may want to do? Are there opportunities to collaborate? As of right now, we just haven't received any additional information or interest to develop the property together. And we do have an agreement with Brinshore. They've submitted an application, and that process should run through the Planning Commission and City Council. But if those applicants and property owners wanted to work together, we would welcome that. Collaboration is always encouraged.
Okay. And what about that substation? Is that still going to get moved, or do we know?
That's a great question. It would be very expensive for that substation to be moved. I don't think that that's a likely thing to happen in the near future. That would be a decision that Rocky Mountain Power would have to make. I haven't had those conversations. I do think it would be a very challenging project to take on.
Okay, so we're just talking about undergrounding those lines basically from Woodbine, Munchkin here to Cemetery.
Correct.
That's where the underlying grounds are going. Okay, you spoke of Brinchrow real quick, and they got before the this committee, it's mostly staff, the Neighborhood First Streets Committee, a meeting earlier this week? No?
No, I'm not aware of that, Leslie,
okay.
Sorry.
Okay. Jody, finally I wanted to ask about there's proposed changes to the city's campaign disclosure ordinance. What's changing here?
So this is simply a state compliance update to our campaign disclosure chapter of the Ethics Code, and that's getting out ahead of the 2027 municipal election cycle. So State Bill 321, passed in 2026, requires mayoral and council candidates to file a campaign finance report each January 10th, showing the prior year's account activity. And that's every year until they close the account and file a dissolution statement and final summary. So we're including that in the code. And then it folds in a few other recent state changes, such as unsuccessful candidates who later file for midterm vacancies must report donations and spending from the interim period. So those are two just minor changes to our code amendments.
Okay, and that's that's because of state changes.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep, we're just
all
following
right.
the state.
Anything else going on you want to tell us about?
Well, we'd like to announce that Leadership Park City Class 33 applications close this Friday at midnight. So for anyone who lives or works in Park City or Summit County, it's a great opportunity to get involved in the community and grow your network. You can find more information and application materials at applyforleadership.com.
Okay, great. Park City Manager Adam Lenhart, Deputy City Manager Jody Emery, thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
You.
Well, the Heber City Council met last night and was scheduled to take a vote on whether to raise property taxes by 4.8%. On the phone with a recap, I have Heber City Mayor Heidi Franco. Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. So what was the outcome with the vote on that proposed tax increase?
The vote was to slightly lower the property tax increase, and it passed at 4.2%, not the 4.8%. So that's a little bit less in what it will likely cost homeowners and commercial businesses come this November.
Okay, so are you pleased with that decision?
No, I don't think it was needed, especially in these uncertain economic times. Plus, the city did recoup more than half of the increased property tax amount through the latest Heber Light and Power dividend back to the city. Yet, council members felt last night that dividend increase could help to lower the property tax increase by a minor amount and then go the rest towards the city's reserves.
And is the MIDA tax increment financing being pulled out of the budget? Is that affecting Heber City or just Wasatch County?
No, just Wasatch County. We don't have anything to do financially or otherwise with MIDA.
Okay. Now, some city leaders favor incremental tax increases to avoid big jumps in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Many residents say any tax increase is a burden in this economy. So how do you balance those two ideas?
I've always thought that if we were to do a small increment every year, even 0.5%, it would be added up over time, and it would help us defray the high inflation that we're facing right now. Yet we still have had sales tax growth and other types of growth into our $18.8 million general fund. So growth has been increasing our coffers, and we are hiring, I think, 4 employees this year. So it shows that the growth is, you know, providing that, but that's still not enough. The city council still thinks that they need more, even with, like I say, the extra income of the Heber Light and Power dividend.
Hmm. So what gets cut since you cut the tax increase by more than 0.5%?
The entire budget was passed, and it was accepted last night for the $18.8 million, as well as the total, right, of up to the $72 million. Now, that includes all the impact fees and all the enterprise funds and so forth, you know, the airport funds and so forth. That's all added up. So You can tell our city is doing well. That's certainly not as much as we spent last year, though, because we were finishing the Eastside Road projects, and we had to borrow $40 million for that and spent that over the last, 4 years, and that's finished now. And so we've come back down to $72 million overall on our budget.
Okay. One item you added to last night's agenda was a discussion of property tax abatements for older adults in Heber City.
Yes.
So how does this program work and who qualifies?
I proposed this back in January to the city council and they were in favor of it. So I've taken time to work with the county staff, especially the county clerk's office, to work out a process for that as well as the programs that the Wasatch County already uses and qualifies low-income senior citizen tax abatement. So I presented that last month to the city council, got a favorable response, asked them when to bring it back. They said after we did all of this other stuff with the budget, and presented that again last night. Now, most are in favor of it. One wants it to be a deferment instead of an abatement. But Leslie, you need to know this is the first time that a city's proposed this in the state. So this is new ground. And one other council member was concerned about that. Another council member is concerned about the funding source. Right now, I'm proposing to use a negotiated fee in lieu from a developer that would provide this income, but we haven't gathered enough yet for this fiscal year, and we have to wait till the end of the year anyway to see who the county qualifies. That would be under the income level of $65,000. And is a senior citizen homeowner within our city. I'm really excited about this program. I think it needs to happen given Heber City's unique circumstances and how much our property taxes have increased, or I should say our property values have increased, and how much our average median income has increased and the inflation. It's really hitting our homeowners that paid off their home and now can hardly afford to live.
So what's the difference between an abatement and a deferment?
An abatement is like a welfare grant, just the money given back. A deferment means that your property taxes are cut, but when the home is sold, then those property taxes have to be paid back to the city. So big difference.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Okay, and as you mentioned, the money to support the program comes from this fee per unit agreement. It's with the Jordan L. Regge developer. How does
it is with Jordan L.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So this agreement is in place?
Yes, it already is in place. It's the Sixth Amendment to the Jordan L. Regge Master Development Agreement. It was passed earlier this year, as I recall, or last year. I'm so sorry. These years kind of go by fast. But that's in place. We are already gathering that money. We have around $40,000 so far. We will probably get more throughout the rest of this summer and fall. And then there'll be more available next year because it's for 3,000 units, an extra fee for 3,000 units, which aren't going to be built all at once. So that fee should last for a decade plus and could be that funding source for this. I don't know if this is going to be a long-term program, but for right now, the need is clear.
Okay, so it's for those earning less than $65,000 a year, the entire tax would be?
It's not, this is their property tax. So they'll all have different properties with different valuations, right? Right now, the county does provide, under state law, some abatement, but it's really not that much. And if we, you and I both remember what it's like to live on $65,000 a year, you know, back ago when we were younger, likely, it's hard. Now, of course, we probably have families then, and that makes it harder. But for those that are on fixed incomes, that own their homes, and are still trying to live at that level in this economy, you know, we really need to help them in our city. The state or county program is just not enough.
Okay. So when will this abatement program get up and running? In time for November?
Well, it's not passed yet. Mm-hmm. It was just continued last night. Some council members want to find a different funding source. I've thought of another idea for that, been reaching out this morning. I'm just saying I'll keep pushing on this. But if, you know, the city council wants to raise property taxes for their reasons, then I feel like this is a really good faith effort to show that we want to keep our longtime citizens in their homes as best as they are able and not continue to put an increasing burden on those that have built this city.
Okay, next month, some city leaders plan to visit the Sacramento area to learn and get ideas. You've said you won't attend. Why not?
No. Well, I have another job, but also I really don't want to do it on the city's dime. So either I pay for it myself and, you know, arrange for that other work to be off, or I see their videos when they come back. So I didn't attend their Colorado trip either, didn't attend their Idaho trip. I'm not going to the California trip. I think Google Maps and research online are going to be just as good.
Okay. So how much is the city spending on this trip to Sacramento?
I'm not sure how many thousands it is. They supposedly did get a very good deal through their Southwest flights. I don't know what all of the price tag will be after they pay for meals and probably mileage per diem and such, you know, back and forth to the airport.
Okay, so what's the main goal of the visit to Sacramento? What's there?
They seem to think that this is a downtown that has certain amenities or attractions that Heber City might be interested in.
Well, it's a capital city. It's so different.
It's the old town part, the historic part. Yes, I would totally agree with you on that. But the old town part is what they're paying attention to.
Okay. The proposed Highlands Public Infrastructure District's back on the agenda for another discussion. This is for the 800-home development near the UVU Wasatch campus. So far, the council's had some concerns about the proposal. Where does the council stand now?
Well, it seems like the council's changed and is more in favor of this because of the PID money that will go towards a needed connection road through the UVU property, that UVU does not have the money, you know, at this point to build themselves. We could talk a lot about PIDs. The only good news that I like out of this development is the 55 units of deed restriction housing that's going to be built and will be at the 60% AMI, 11 units, as well as the 44 units at 80% AMI.
Okay, so how would you like the council to vote on this issue? Sounds like you're not in favor.
I really don't like PIDs generally. I think they put quite a bit of burden on the property tax owners instead of the development paying for things up front. This particular development has put in tens of millions of dollars of infrastructure already, but they still want more with the PID. And you know, it'll come back for a vote. We'll see what the city council does.
All right. There's been a lot of discussion in the community recently about flock cameras. Heber City Police Chief Parker Sever gave a public meeting safety update last night. What did he have to say about this technology?
I think we've got some really good protections in place with flock, right? It's only a 30-day window that the data is stored. The data only shows license plates. It does not show facial features. That's the way it's programmed. That's the way the records come through. The chief explained the audit procedures that he uses to monitor who's accessing the data in the force, our police force, and he sets those fields up so anomalies are reported. You know, if someone was tracking someone, you know, internally, that would show up on this report. I've asked him to prepare a video or to, you know, show on their website how that works. Another council member said, hey, these things are already available on the flock website. Now, the chief did explain how he can share the data with other police agencies within the state or even across the nation if they ask. They have to ask first. He's going to check and make sure there is an actual case, and nothing's going to be searched in that database unless there is an actual case, an actual reason for that actual make and model. It's not for just a general search.
Okay, so you don't have a problem with them despite the concern over civil liberty here?
I understand there are civil liberties concern, but no person is identified. So it's not like they're tracking you as a person or individually. It is programmed to only read the characters on that license plate. Yes, sometimes it may not get that perfectly, and that can lead to other issues. But by and large, I've seen how its use for decades, right? It's been over a decade that we've used it within our city, how it does solve crime. And I'm always concerned about crime and safety in the city. So I haven't seen any egregious use against civil liberties, because that is huge also for me.
Okay, I'm about out of time. Anything else you wanted to mention?
We're excited for the Olympic Host Communities Committee that was held last week up at the Utah Olympic Park. That was wonderful to be there. I've asked in City Council last night that we do set up an interlocal meeting to discuss again our Olympic priorities, because the Olympic Committee is looking to gather those priorities come November from the communities. They want to see the themes and the ideas and the projects that are happening across the state so that they can see how to elevate that up to the state level, perhaps, or be able to, again, keep organizing and preparing.
Okay. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Have a good day.